The shooting massacre this past week at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, caused many of us to think back to other school shootings in America. One on that way too long of a list is the mass shooting which took place in Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, which is in Parkland, Florida, on February 14, 2018. Certainly a date my guest will forever have carved into his heart, since that was the day his son Luke, who was one of the 17 who were slaughtered, rather than surrendering to the pain, he chose to fight and make a difference every way he could as part of the organization Stand with Parkland. We say good morning to Tom Hoyer. How are you today, Tom?
Good, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
StandWithParkland.org is the website. Learn more about the work and the successes in the work that Tom and the others have had. Before we get into this interview, I just want to state for the record here for you listening, I did invite today representatives from Gun Owners of America and the Second Amendment Foundation to be on the show today. The response from the Second Amendment Foundation, there was none. Gun Owners of America, they offered their so-called celebrity spokesperson, who pretty much just read press releases aloud, so I declined that opportunity. So just so you know, and I tried to keep this on both sides as we go through the show today. So that being said, we are here again this past Tuesday, Tom. Certainly, as I mentioned, your connection to this moment of darkness is probably as strong now as it was in 2018. So the news of another shooting comes about, develops, falls into our ears and into our hearts. What goes through your mind after 2 years or just about?
It takes me right back to that day. I know what those families are going through. You know, I read about them being in that civic center. They're sitting in there, those families, and they're waiting to hear something about their child. And as time goes by, hope disappears and it turns into despair. And then you start wondering about your child, where they are,
what an AR-15 does to a human body, adult human body, is horrific. But to the body of a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, we heard about how parents have to give their DNA so they can identify the children. That's how torn up these small little bodies have suffered through.
Yes, yeah, it's pretty horrific.
And was there an extra strong impact of Uvalde when it happened? Because pretty much everything that they could have failed in doing, they failed in doing. And I think back to the Parkland shooting where you had an SRO who thought SRO was standing room only.
Yeah. I don't know everything that's happened up at Uvalde, and, time will tell as they go through the investigation. There's a lot of early reports that are pretty distressing coming out of there, but, out of fairness, we got to wait and see. Our situation, SRO stood outside for almost, a little over 40 minutes, and the shooting was over in about 6. So it's pretty distressing when you have probably one of the key things that you can have for school safety, somebody on the campus, because almost all school shootings are ended or stopped by somebody who's on campus when they start. You have somebody with that role on the campus who, in their moment of truth, fail.
It also, I guess this is another case, too, where we'll find out, sooner versus later, as we have had happen time after time after time, if someone in this person's life said something to somebody, or if they did, if that somebody listened, maybe, not every instance like this, but maybe this is one of the ones that could have been prevented.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we advocate for is behavioral assessment teams, and that's a multidisciplinary team of school officials, school counselors, local mental health, and law enforcement. It's a team. It's a group, and people get referred to that group. You think back to Oxford, which seems like a long time ago, but wasn't, and has kind of dropped out because of these last mass shootings. But they had him in a room, and they just didn't know what to do with him, and so they sent him back to the classroom. We need some kind of a forum where you have somebody that brings him in, assesses him mentally. Police officer would say, I'm going to go check the kid's locker, backpack, or something. We're going to remove them from the campus. Something as immediate as that. And then leading up to things like this, You're exactly right. They, and I'm sure we're going to find out that this killer in Uvalde was sending out signals. He was red flags, and you know, people just didn't know what to do with the red flags. We have to have a forum for a place they can go, and you know, these individuals can be identified and hopefully mitigated.
Well, he did send up flags. He was private messaging somebody. We don't know who that somebody is yet. Yes, the question or two questions to that person concerning that person is, did they not tell anybody, or are they as in a dark place as the shooter was, and they saw these messages and went, hey, cool.
Yeah. No, that could very well be true. I mean, and there's another thing that we advocate for. It's called Safer Watch. Well, it's apps, actually, but we advocate for one called Safer Watch because we're familiar with them. Where if somebody is on the receiving end of a message like that and it disturbs them, they can actually immediately report it on the app, and it goes to the school and the local law enforcement, and they can take immediate action. And it's been used many times here in Florida since the Parkland shooting. We've done a lot of things here. That's one of them. It's been used several times here to intervene, and it's been very effective. But it gives the students who receive this information, whether they observe it or get it directly, a form for reporting something immediately.
Tom Hoyer, who is a part of the Stand With Parkland organization, standwithparkland.org. His son, Luke, was also one of the 17 victims in the shooting that took place at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, on February 14, 2018. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Turning over to, I hesitate, but we have to, because if something's going to get done, some people have to face reality. We have our politicians. It seems like I've saved every bit of audio that I've ever done with every interview on the show from day one. I could have put together a show from audio from 4, 5, 8 years ago would have sound current, because we keep hearing the same things over and over and over again. But this time's going to be different, they say. Do you believe that?
I would say I hope that. Probably the best way I could put it. I hope that. It's, you know, there are the, you know, the headline things that everybody talks about, background checks, you know, banning assault weapons. There are other things that we can be talking about that I think have a little more traction. Red flag laws is one of them, for example, extreme risk protection orders, which give police a tool to remove weapons from a bad situation, and gives the owner, you know, due process on the back end, but is specific. You know, it's not like a broad, you know, hey, you know, we're going to govern everybody who's trying to purchase a weapon, but it's, which is also okay, but we need specific kinds of interventions, and that's one. And then it's been used here in Florida since we got it implemented here in Florida over 5,000 times. You know, some of those times something was prevented. It's hard to measure what gets prevented, obviously.
Well, the law in Florida, is that something where everyone has to be in the courtroom? Because there are some states with red flag laws where the mental health professional can just submit an affidavit, and the opponents of this idea use that as a reason of, well, there's no give and take, there's no Q&A. You're reducing the rights of the gun owner by not having the mental health professional in the courtroom.
Yeah, so there's supposed to be no courtroom, of course, with COVID, Zoom. Everybody's on Zoom these days.
There
was
on
Zoom, so now they're getting back in the courtroom. But yes, it is something where people are in the courtroom. So it's usually, and down here, it's usually the police that are the ones that are, you know, reacting to a report and you know, removing the gun. So they are in court. Yes.
Is police training something that has to be re-examined too? Because it's great to have it on paper of, okay, if this happens, here's what you do. But again, as we saw in Uvalde, even the basics seem to just not connect with that police force. And I think I even heard one of the officials say, basically excuse it by saying, well, we're a small town. Oh, great. Mm-hmm. That just gives a welcome mat to anyone who wants to shoot up someplace. I'll look for a small town now.
Yeah, that's the whole soft target theory, unfortunately. There is training. In Broward County, there actually was training prior to the shooting, but it was very lackadaisical. They didn't take it very seriously. And so there are programs out there to train how to react to an active shooter response. But even with the training, you know, if you have an SRO or officers that won't enter the building. And that was, in our case, both things here in Parkland. I'm still waiting to hear what Valdi is going to tell us. But, you know, you have to find people that have the will to protect, you know, the community, schools, kids in schools. So it's, I don't know, a little distressing.
Is it just a, could it be as simple as making a federal law? Because every state, we're trying to jigsaw puzzle pieces that don't fit. And someone can go one state over, get a gun, come back to the state where they couldn't get a gun and do something evil and stupid. Florida, for example, the background checks, it's not over until you've cleared. It's the process versus the clock. And in some states, it's the clock that gets more focus and more a higher platform than the process does.
Yeah, that's a hard question. So, you know, I guess in a very academic way, you'd say, you know what, you know, you got to have a national law. It is, practically speaking, you know, we live in a republic and states have rights and they fight for the rights. So, I think we're actually kind of, in a lot of ways, stuck in a state by state kind of solution for this. Yeah. Which is a little unfortunate.
No, no, I think an original intentist of the Constitution might just say, well, it's specifically mentioned in the Constitution as something that the federal government has oversight over, so it has to be everything regarding that element that the federal government has to have oversight over.
Yep, and that's a point of view, and there's points of view against it. And unfortunately, people are dug in on all of this.
It's
Stand with Parkland. We're trying to find things that people can agree on. Our group is a big group. We have lots of people from different backgrounds, you know, races, religions, political affiliations, and you know, things like you know, like red flag laws, you know, things like you know, more mental health support in schools, which includes those behavioral threat assessment teams. You know, things like securing the school. You know, I'm waiting to see if the school was actually secure or not. Like, it's just a single point of entry, you know, keeping locked doors inside and outside the school. You know, basic things like that are things that, you know, and we're still trying to get all these things legislated.
As we've learned, I think it was Brady Foundation that tabbed up who gets money from which gun organization, surprisingly. It isn't who you think it is. It's people like Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney who have been reaping in millions of dollars in PAC, yep, PAC support from the NRA and other gun organizations. Is that waning now? Is that going to wane in light of the frequency we see these horrors happen? We can certainly hope so. Maybe that's, if you stop paying the prostitute, maybe the prostitute will break off and start doing what's right instead of committing crimes.
Yep. I mean, it could be. It's the, you know, in the things that we're trying to do, the whole political process is intransigent, and that's both Republicans and Democrats. You know, it's, you know, I'm going back now, like, what, probably 10 years or so ago, President Obama tried to get a ban on assault weapons passed, and that was Democratic House, Democratic Senate, Democratic President.
Yep.
Didn't happen. So, you know, the things we're trying to work through now, it's, you know, some of it is people in the Republican Party resist things, and some of it is in the Democratic Party that resist things. So it is across the board, and it's mostly people dug in on their position and, like, their way is the only way, and their thing is the only thing. And I've, you know, we're trying to find some people to kind of step forward and say, okay, you know, we'll give a little on this, you give a little on that. We'll give a little on this, you give a little on that. You know, try to find some compromise, because you keep saying, I mean, this should not be a partisan issue, but the solutions get boxed into partisan rhetoric. It's just, it's very frustrating.
And if you look at the polls, too, red flag laws, 90% approval rating, extending the waiting period for background checks in the 80 percentile in approval, and that's everybody, it's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, massively in favor assault weapon bans. Yeah, the GOP is a little more weaker on that figure. I think it was a 35% approval versus 70% for people who say they're Democrats. And is one law going to stop and prevent every possible massacre? No, but be nice to stop the next one, because I'm sure there are 19 families sitting in Uvalde, Texas, wishing theirs was the one that could have been stopped. If you're feeling the darkness overcome you and you think that there is nothing to do, I want to encourage you to spend some time with the Stand With Parkland website, standwithparkland.org, and join their fights. Incorporate some of their ideas in your state if you're listening on the stream, or if you're here in New Jersey, because it sounds so simple. Our priorities are supposed to be our children. If you want to be biblical about it, we're supposed to protect the innocent. If you want to just be honest about it, how can you support anything that results in the evil that we saw this past Tuesday, a couple of weeks to 10 days before that in Buffalo? What's next? Well, maybe, just maybe, you could be one of the people who can help stop the next when you take a stand with Parkland at standwithparkland.org, as well as what you can do. Look around and where you reside too, local community, your state, because a lot of people have had enough of a lot of killing, and it's time to get people who make the decisions to make the right ones, or find new people to make those decisions. Yeah. And here in New Jersey, we got the right time of year to do that, and nationally too with the midterm elections coming up. StandWithParkland.org. We've been talking with one of their strong members who is making a difference, Tom Hoyer. Tom, thanks so much for stepping forward, stepping up, and teaching us how to do everything we can to address the situation.
Chris, I really appreciate you taking time to have me on the show here.